This is a day I've been looking forward to for 2.5 years. Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything. Today, we're introducing 3 revolutionary products of this class. The first one is a widescreen iPod with touch controls. The second is a revolutionary mobile phone. And the third is a breakthrough internet communications device. So, 3 things. An iPod, a phone. Are you getting it? These are not 3 separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
And boy, did they. That was, what did I say, January 9th, 2007. That was the day that Apple, as we just clearly saw, unveiled the iPhone. And the controls that they had then, you know, we would laugh at now. But you see, you saw what they were so proud of. And this is going to be something that we're going to talk about. Steve Jobs really wanted to change the world, and he did. And he wanted to create a device that would help people and make their lives better. However, I don't think he could have predicted what would really come of it and what would really happen with it. And there have been some great things that have come out of technology. There have been some great, and we're going to talk about them. There have been some great things that have come out of social media. And there have been some great things that have come out of the internet. So, we're talking about something that's here to stay. Technology's not going anywhere. We can wish it away. I do pretty regularly, even working in technology, I wish it away because then people couldn't get in contact with me. But we can wish it away all we want, but it's here. It's been here for a while. And in some instances, it's gone unchecked for a long time. Our cyber laws, for instance, most of them, the most prevalent one, was originally written, I believe, in 1989. It's the Computer Crimes, Fraud, and Abuse Act. That was originally written in 89, somewhere around there, before computers hadn't even made it to the home yet. And that still is like the most heaviest piece of cyber law that we have. There are some other ones, but that's probably the most prevalent. So let's talk about what this topic is and isn't. What I'm not attempting to do, first and foremost, is parent your children or your grandchildren. I really am not trying to do that. I'm also not trying to accuse anyone of wrongdoing. I had this in there before this morning's lesson, and I realized I started making people self-conscious of their use of their cell phone. But in a way, that's kind of good, you know? Maybe a little self-awareness is good, but I'm not trying to accuse anyone of any wrongdoing, and I'm also not trying to create paranoia. Technology isn't something to be paranoid about. Technology isn't something to be fearful of. A healthy fear, yes, but not such a fear that we let it just kind of wreck everything in the wrong way. However, what I am attempting to do here is bring awareness to what our kids and adults, what I really want to make clear is that this is something we are all facing. As I mentioned in first service, this is not discriminatory towards age. It applies to everyone. Bring awareness to what our kids and adults are facing in cyberspace. I also want to create a proactive attitude towards our interactions with the internet and cyberspace. I want to encourage us to reflect how we are when we interact in that world, because that world tends to be a little different than the world that we live in, but it's very much a part of it. And also encourage a time of self-reflection. And I want to encourage us all to kind of think about where we sit in some of the statistics that we're going to talk about. Where do we sit? Do we sit on the side of, oh, well, maybe this does apply to me? And that, again, I'm not trying to accuse anyone of wrongdoing. This is something that we are all facing, myself included. YouTube has a firm grasp on my attention because DIY videos are fascinating. And they're just incredible. So, you know, I want to encourage a time of reflection. But first, let's go through some fact versus fiction. I want to go through a couple common myths. Some of these are kind of easy ones. You may have already known this. Some of this stuff, you may not. So, for starters, cell phones at a gas pump are a fire risk. The cell phone itself does not cause the fire risk. You are the one that is the fire risk. It is to make you aware of your surroundings and what you're doing. Because if you're on your phone, it has your attention. And nothing's worse than getting gas spilled on you. Actually, there might be a few things worse, like the gas igniting. But we don't want gas getting pumped on us. So, another thing, more cell service equals better cell service. Have you ever been somewhere and you've had full cell service and you still can't connect to anything? That's what I call the game day effect. Basically, for those of us that, you know, love Jesus and we go to Tuscaloosa on game day, I had to. Anyway, so I just lost half your audience. That's how you do it. So the game day effects, I guess if you go to Auburn, this is what happens. But anywhere you go and a large crowd of people are gathered and there's not a lot of cell service, and there's not a lot of ability to provide cell service, you're not gonna be able to connect. So say you have a cell tower, and that cell tower has the capability to provide fast internet to 1,000 phones. Well, if 3,000 phones show up, it can't handle it. So it just slows down and sometimes just stops. So that's what I call the game day effect. Apple computers cannot get viruses. This is very much not true. They absolutely can. Long story short on the reason why they usually typically don't or are safer is because Windows or Microsoft still has probably a 73% market share of the enterprise world. Most of you probably use a Windows computer at your work. So that, and people that create viruses create them towards that. So that's why that happens. Cryptocurrency. We're not going to talk about this any more than just what's up here. Cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, Ethereum, I don't know if you've heard of them. But there's a myth that it's anonymous. That's not inherently true. That's not totally true. You have to do a lot of work, and you got to really know what you're doing to make cryptocurrency anonymous. So that's all I'm going to say about that. Social media companies steal my information. False. I'll say that because I guarantee you, if you go and you read the terms and conditions, you have probably voluntarily given up that information. One of the things that you will see, and one of the things that we'll talk about, social media is a monster data mining industry. You are the most valuable thing to them. Your data, your information, and the moment we signed up for it, we said, here you go. And they have, boy, have they taken advantage of it. So, another one, the dark web is illegal. The dark web itself is not illegal. Typically, and I'll show a picture of this demonstrating what exactly that is. The dark web itself is not inherently illegal. Usually what happens on it is. So if you want to say it is illegal, that's fine, but technically it's not. So this is a classic image to describe the internet as a whole. At the top, so this is an iceberg. So at the top you have the surface web. This is your Google, your Bing, your anything that you can search on a publicly available search engine. These are things that are easily accessible right now, and you don't have to do anything to access that information. Nothing at all. So like, you know, your news media sites, those would be considered surface web. Deep web. Deep web is anything that requires a password. Anything that requires any level of authentication to get into. Anytime you access your bank account, your online bank account, you are going into the deep web. So anything like that, any kind of personal information like medical records, things like that, those are stored on what is considered the deep web, the dark web. This is not accessible by your regular devices. Well, okay, not your regular devices, but your regular search engines. Google does not access the dark web. Bing does not access the dark web. You have to have a specific tool to get there. And no, I'm not going to tell you what it is. So if you think someone you might know is on the dark web, come and find me. I'll let you know. So I'm not going to tell you what it is. But if you just have your regular old phone, you're not anywhere near the dark web and you're not going to get there. So let's look at some statistics. Yay, you signed up for a stats class. Okay, some of these are going to be a little hard to look at, but we're going to probably breeze through these because I don't want to bore you to death. So more than 8 in 10 U.S. adults go online at least daily. Would you say that's probably true? You probably find yourself going online, you know, at least once during the day. 31% of that, and these are adults, 31% of U.S. adults say they go on the internet constantly. They are constantly on the internet. 48% say several times a day. And this quote up here, the share of constantly online Americans aged 30 to 49 has risen 14 points since 2015. And the share of 50 to 64-year-olds has risen from 12% to 22% in 2021. So clearly this is impacting all of us. We are all on the internet. Now let's look at teen internet use. Teen internet use, this is probably something we all kind of knew. Nearly half of teens now say they use the internet almost constantly. 97% of teens use the internet almost constantly. So this is an impact. This does affect all of us, right? So what we may say that is directed towards maybe the teens can also be directed towards us. And what we say to the adults could also be directed towards the teens. This is universal, non-discriminatory towards age, right? Let's look at mental health. This is a big one. I don't know how well you can see that, but notice how sharply the percentage of adolescents that are using mental health services has risen. And this is not random, uncorrelated information. This is directly correlated to the increased use of phones and the increased use of social media. And I have a graph that we'll look at later that shows more about this. But the mental health crisis is growing, and it is growing substantially. And looking at this, 12.8% of kids aged 12 through 17 receive mental health treatment in educational systems. That comes out to 3.1 million children. I noticed in this graph that services were introduced to schools 2 years after the iPhone launched. 2 years after the iPhone launched in 2009 is when these services started being introduced into schools. In 2010, Instagram would be released. So we see kind of where this is going, right? Mental health is a big part of this, because what social media does, there's this concept called the cyber you, who you are on the internet, and what your cyber footprint is. That may be a concept we've heard before, our cyber footprint, but also our cyber you, who we present ourselves to be online. And one of the things that these teens are going through is trying to figure out where they belong and who they are. And now social media is going to be the ones to help chisel that out. Remember what I said this morning. If the internet has to choose between sympathy and scorn, it will almost always pick scorn. That's like the general internet. Now, your close friends, I hope your close friends would not scorn you all the time. But, and that's a key part of that, right? Who are you in contact with on social media? But this cyber you, this image that you're portraying of yourself, and it's a risk that some of these kids are putting themselves out there, because they put themselves at risk to this judgment. And it's a harsh judgment sometimes that these kids come under. How does that affect them? How does that affect us? And you know, a lot of us, I mean, I'm 24 years old, and I really generally don't care what the world thinks about me. I mean, I feel like most of us in this room are probably that way. You know, we're beyond that. But these kids are not. You know, there was a time where I was generally concerned about how I appeared to others. What was my impression on people? And so we need to be guiding these kids through this. And so we'll get into some practices later that I think will help solve some of this, some of the mental health issues around that. So let's look at the smartphone. And I put smart in quotation marks, but really and truly the smartphone is ridiculously smart. Like smart beyond our imagination. Smartphone used to just define that you could get on the internet and check your email. That's like, we wouldn't get a phone if it didn't have that ability now. So these smartphones are very, very, very smart. This is said quite often, but our iPhone, just in the iPhones, and Androids are this way too, just in the iPhone, in the palm of your hand, you have more computing power than what NASA had to put man on the moon. Just in the palm of your hand. The iPhone XS Max, which is what I have, which is now four generations behind, has the ability to perform 7 trillion operations per second. That is a lot. That's a lot of operations. And I had a video, because there was this game that I played on my phone, because I'm addicted to my phone. And there's this game on my phone that I was playing, and this was the closest thing I've seen to 7 trillion operations per second. It was overwhelming, but it was kind of cool at the same time. So the smartphone. Let's look at this. So 62% of U.S. adults own a smartphone. Notice right here, the iPhone is released. Less than 75% of people at this point own an iPhone, or own a cell phone, really. A huge uptick. An uptick that we have never seen again. We've never seen that kind of adoption since. And ever since then, it's slowly risen. 91% or in 2002, it was 62%. In 2021, 91% of U.S. adults own a cell phone. Just out of curiosity, and this is like, I'm actually wanting hands raised on this. Does anybody know somebody that does not have a cell phone? Wow. That is awesome. That's incredible. Those are blessed people. So we look at this. Percent of a group who owns a smartphone, this is basically that same data, and it's broken up into various different categories. So basically, this is just to further prove everyone owns one. We've all got one. It all applies to us. So let's keep looking. This is probably the most interesting graph, and I know some of you are thinking, what is interesting about a graph? This one is pretty interesting. So this one says, most parents don't think it's acceptable for a child under the age of 12 to have their own smartphone. And on the left column, you'll see 22% of parents think it is okay for their kids to have a phone at age 11 or younger. However, on the right, the same age group, 65% of parents agree or say that it is okay for their kids to have a tablet. My challenge is this. My one challenge to this is this. That's confusing. My one challenge is this. What is the difference between a tablet and a smartphone? Virtually nothing, especially if you're looking just at the difference between an iPad and an iPhone. They literally advertised it at one point as a bigger iPhone. So tablets are still a part of this problem. And I know they make certain tablets that are specifically geared towards kids. And, you know, those are great-ish. We'll kind of talk about those and kind of some of the science behind that a little bit. But I found that very interesting that, you know, we don't really want them to have their own phone, but they can have an iPad or they can have a tablet. They can have an Amazon Kindle or whatever. Based on that and based on what we're going to see, I think that might be something to reconsider. So this is the new iPhone 14. In case y'all didn't know, the world continued spinning. So the new iPhone was released. And this idea of always wanting your attention, even more prevalent now. Apple released this new feature on this new iPhone called the Always On Display. Basically what it does is when you're not using your phone and you put it down beside you, it just dims the screen just slightly so you can see the time and the date and whatever little widgets you want up there. But the screen doesn't turn off. It's always piquing your interest. It's always keeping you engaged. And in fact, because I'm a nerd, I listen to tech podcasts. And one of these guys that got early access to the iPhone, they were learning to live with it. And one of the things he was saying was, man, it's really hard for me to disconnect. He said, I can't get away from my phone. It's an always on display, but he was like, I feel like it's always on. And well, you know, Apple's like mission accomplished. So it's always wanting our attention. So real quickly, and don't worry everybody, I've got a clock right here. So I know where we're going. So we're gonna look at cyberbullying for just a second. It's very important. A majority of people who've been harassed online say the most recent experience occurred on social media. For those that can't see that, 75% of online harassment happens on social media. Social media is the largest facilitator of this. That's not something to take lightly. That's not something to take with just like, it's fine. It's okay, it's whatever. No. And this is most prevalent in teens. Teens are usually the ones who are the most susceptible to online harassment. Not always, but generally most of the time. So with social media being the largest facilitator of this, One might say, well, what are the social media companies doing about it? Nothing. That's the answer. They're doing nothing, really. It's on us. It's on us as Christians, as parents, as a church family to encourage, one, how are we ourselves acting on social media? How are we ourselves treating other people on social media? And what are our kids going through? What are these teens going through? What are our families going through? So while we're talking about social media addiction, there's this great movie that that we've watched. It's on Netflix. It's called The Social Dilemma. I don't know if anybody's watched it. It is fascinating and scary. It's probably the scariest movie you'll ever watch. Not because of like jump scares or anything, but because the people that invented the problem we have today are on the record and on this documentary saying, we've created a problem. And we left because no one is willing to fix it. And because they've generated far too much money. People, all of us, are addicted to social media probably in some way. And they're designed that way. They literally designed the app to do that. They designed the app to keep you constantly engaged. The more engaged you are, the more money they make. Hence the reason why tech companies are the largest and most profitable companies in human history. In the movie, it says this: only two things refer to humans as users, drugs and social media. And to me, that was powerful. Think about it. I mean, like, really think about it. Like, in general, drugs and social media are really the ones that we refer to as users. So something to take away from that. Social media use. I was actually kind of surprised by this a little bit. 95% of teens use YouTube, which I guess makes sense, but I was figuring TikTok would have much higher percentage there. So YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, and Facebook is just nowhere to be found with the teenagers. So just don't even worry about seeing teenagers on Facebook because statistically, it's not happening. So just wait till you get older. So YouTube and TikTok, those are our biggest ones. Snapchat, also big. I want to talk about Snapchat for a moment. So for those of you that don't know what Snapchat is, Snapchat is literally where you take a picture of yourself, just of your face or whatever, and you just send it to a friend. Harmless. However, note that every app up here, by the way, is rated for 17 and up. Every app up here on the App Store is rated at 17 and up. Primarily for this reason. Why would Snapchat be rated 17 and up? Because many people don't know its original purpose. Its original purpose was to send sexually explicit images to people without them being able to save it. It was originally designed for that. That was its original purpose before my age people came in, took it over, and we were like, we're just going to send stuff for fun, and we're just going to make this fun. Well, don't think its original concept hasn't gone away. And let's also think about this for a minute. What it does, what Snapchat does, when you take a picture, you know, take a selfie, this is where selfie originated from, take a selfie and you send it to your friend. Say, I send a selfie to Malvin. What that does is it goes from my phone to a server, another computer at Snapchat's headquarters, and it gets saved there, by the way. It gets saved there. It makes a stop in California before it comes to Malvin. So when you think that this picture has just simply gone away into the universe to never be seen again, it's backed up. And you agreed to it. So, and TikTok, I'm not really going to go into what TikTok is just. It took me forever to get rid of TikTok. I mean, it really did. They are good. They are good at what they do. And when you open the app and then you look up again and you've burned 3 hours, it's time to make a life change. And so it takes a long time to get rid of TikTok, but boy, if you got it, I encourage you to get rid of it. It's not that what they put on there is inherently bad. It's just there's no reward. Like long term, there's no reward. You're just throwing away time. You're throwing away the opportunity to make connections with people. And that's what they want. I'm not going to go into all that, but that's how they've designed the app. So all of this is kind of leading to pornography, right? Everybody can breathe. We said the word out loud. We're there. We're here. Pornography. I hate that we have to talk about this. It's horrible. It is terrible. I've seen what it can do. I know what it can do. And it'll wreck your world. Let's talk about this for a minute. It is a $13 billion industry. So this is not just some small side business that people do. This is a true revenue and profit generating business. 47% of families in America reported that pornography is a problem in their home. 56% of divorce cases involve one party having an obsessive interest in pornographic websites. And about 200,000 Americans are classified as porn addicts. And those are just the ones that we know about. This is what I tend to call the silent sin. This is the one you're not gonna have a lot of people, you know, come forward about this. You're not gonna have a lot of people come out with it because there is so much shame and guilt wrapped around it. 40 million American people regularly visit porn sites. 35% of all internet downloads, which think about how big the internet is now. 35% of that, over a third of it, of all internet downloads are related to pornography. 34% of internet users have experienced unwanted exposure to pornographic content through ads, pop-up ads, misdirected links, or emails. So this is an interesting one. Sometimes we don't mean to see this. Sometimes we're not actively searching, and it's there. And that's the nature of our society. We live in a hypersexualized society. We do. And it is extremely prevalent, and this isn't helping. And something else that's grown, that's not talked about a lot. One third of porn viewers are women. This isn't just a dude thing. This isn't just a thing that dudes go through. This is something that everybody goes through. And this is something that involves all ages. And it's not discriminatory either. Effects on teenagers. It drastically increases the odds of teenage pregnancy. It raises the risk of depression. Why? Because you are constantly looking for something that you will never obtain. And that is the point. To give you something that you can never have except on that website. And so that way you're constantly going back to it. It distorts their view of relationships. It distorts how they view how men and women are supposed to treat each other. It distorts what a true relationship means. And it creates a debilitating reliance on a shallow platform of entertainment. It really is. It's shallow. And that's the point. It's shallow entertainment that will create debilitating consequences and a debilitating reliance. So, thinking about all this with Snapchat and how hypersexualized our country is and our society is and our culture is, I want to look at this. This is very, very, very important. For those of you that just really want to go look this up, I really encourage you. If there's anything out of this I encourage you to look up, it's this. This is the U.S. law, federal law, regarding child exploitation or child pornography. In the code, it says, any person, this is not discriminatory towards age either, that employs, uses, persuades, induces, entices, or coerces a minor. A minor is considered anyone under the age of 18, right? This is something that our society has tried to just kind of push to the side, like, yes, this is a thing, but we're going to feed you a bunch of information. We're going to feed you a bunch of content that's just going to wreck your world. So what does it mean? It says things regarding visual depictions. Visual depictions include photographs, videos, digital or computer-generated images indistinguishable from an actual minor, and images created, adapted, or modified but appear to depict an identifiable actual minor. Meaning, there doesn't have to be anything sexual happening, but if it implies sexual conduct, it violates this law. It is a very black and white law, and it is a very unforgiving law either. I believe for the first offense, a first-time charged offense is a minimum 15 years in prison and like a $500,000 fine. And then repeat offenders, it just gets way out of hand. Life in prison, fines you'll never be able to repay, and anyone convicted of this type of crime must register as a sex offender. I've seen, and we're about to get to our last section, I promise, I'm almost done. But this is important, and this is really hard for me to get into time, so just bear with me. There were a few cases that we read, and I encourage you to maybe not think this way. I think that the fact that there was a case where a 17-year-old boy was in a relationship with a 15-year-old girl. It's a high school relationship, nothing, you know, we all had high school relationships. It's fine, it happens, you know, all high school relationships, cool. 17-year-old turns 18. He's technically no longer a minor. Well, part of their relationship, they were sending sexually explicit images. Well, dad of the 15-year-old gets the phone, sees what is on the phone, and gets rightfully mad. However, so mad that he presses charges against this boy. And is now a registered sex offender because of it. Now, there was, in a lot of the classes that we took, there was some pretty heavy debate on whether or not he should have had to register. Because, like, really, was the guy a pedophile? Probably not. But this law is very black and white. This law is very clear. So I wanted to take a moment and just look at that. Now, after all of that just dark and depressing stuff, a case for the good. So, good results of technology. We can reconnect with old friends and families. You know, how many people here have friends on Facebook and families on Facebook that you would probably never see or talk to if it wasn't for Facebook? You know, that was an inherent good. And that was the original intent behind Facebook. Well, kind of. But overall, that's what it became to be when it became the public. You can learn about any topic or solve any problem. How incredible is that? You have an access to more knowledge than any human has in history. What I'll say to that, and this is part of where these guardrails come into, part of guardrails, is that you can learn about any topic. Meaning, what's to stop a 12-year-old from Googling, you know, is there a God? Do we want Google guiding our kids through that? Or do we want somebody that cares about their salvation? Google does not care about your salvation. Google does not care at all. But do you want Google guiding that conversation, or do you want somebody that genuinely cares about you guiding it? Online education or online work. I work from home thanks to the internet. Woo, woo. And so, yeah, I work in my pajamas. Sorry, I do. And it's all thanks to the internet. To me, that's an inherent good. There are probably several people in here that are like, no, that's bad. My mother's one of them. So she's one of them who definitely thinks that me working from home is not good. Easier spreading of the gospel around the world. We saw when the AV deacons came up and Bobby spoke, we saw the map of where our live streams go out all over the world. That would be impossible without the internet. People with disabilities have greater resources. One example is people who are visually impaired. There was a study of these people who were visually impaired, and they all got iPads. And because of these iPads, they had accessibility features where they could zoom and they could see the text really big. Whereas if they had bought books for the size font that they really need, I'm not talking about like a thick, you know, large print Bible. I'm talking like, imagine the Bible spread across like 15 volumes because of how large the font is. And because of technology, they just have to carry around a little half ounce iPad. Raising money and awareness to social and personal issues. If you need financial help, you can post that online. I maybe wouldn't, but you can, and a lot of good things have come from that. Birthdays are remembered. Thankfully, Facebook, we remember everybody's birthday now. So, you know, that's an inherent good. All right. After this, two more slides and I'm done. I promise I'm done. Suggestions for a better cyberspace. For the younger ones, Wait Till 8th. This is a program, this is a organization that promotes waiting until 8th grade before your child gets a phone. And some would argue even high school. You probably should just wait till high school before you get a phone. Wait until 8th. Something I strongly encourage you to look at, strongly I encourage you to research on, and something to consider. Limit screen time. So this is coming from the American Pediatric Association. They recommend zero screen time until at least 18 to 24 months old. Zero. And now yes, you know, TV, maybe. Like, that's generally probably okay. I'm talking about screen time. You know, we see that. None of that. And from ages 2 to 5, only an hour per day. And for as you get older, you know your kids. You know how they are. Discuss with your kid about how, and maybe there shouldn't be a discussion. Maybe there's a problem. But you know your kid. Discuss about setting appropriate screen time limits. Start to think about how long, you know, they actually use their phone. How much screen time do they actually need? And no, you do not need 8 hours of screen time. That is healthy for not a soul. Is 8 hours of screen time healthy? Now then, another thing. What you post online can affect you for years or even decades. And what I'll say about this briefly is now companies, when they are hiring people, they go and look at your social media platforms. They go and look and see what you're posting online. And that can be a determining factor on whether or not you get hired on for a job or accepted into a college. That is a huge thing now. There are people, their whole jobs are dedicated to that. Do not post, and this is for, I say this in the next one as well, this is for all of us. Do not post personally identifiable information online at all, whatsoever. Just don't do it. There's no reason. We need to remember, and kids need to remember that they are still kids. And we don't need to let the internet rob them of that. The internet is trying to rob them of them being kids. And we have to remember that sometimes. Believe in the real you, not the cyber you. Don't believe in the persona that you're trying to put out there. Don't believe in the person that you're trying to create. Try to create a better person in the real world. If you think you need to be a better person, then work on that in the real world. Don't believe in the cyber you. Believe in who you really are. Now then, for all of us, reduce the number of notifications you receive to the absolute minimum. I mean, minimum. Texts, phone calls, emails. Anything that is truly important, yes, you need those notifications. But like, you know, 8-Ball Pool, do we really need notifications from 8-Ball Pool? You know, or Candy Crush, do you really need notifications from Candy Crush? Because they send you the notification to get your attention. So remember that. Reduce what personal information you share online. Post about that vacation after you come home. Because if you don't know who your friends are, or if your profile is public, and you post that, hey, I'm in, you know, Anchorage, Alaska for the next 2 weeks, so excited to be here, so excited to be in God's glorious beauty. You've probably just told somebody in public that you're not home for the next 2 weeks, and we've got 2 weeks to figure out how to come and take everything from you. So don't just post about the vacation after you come home. So don't do Facebook quizzes. That is a real thing where a lot of these Facebook quizzes, and you may think they're harmless, you know, what kind of Disney character you are. You know, those are fun, but if they ask you information like, what's your mother's maiden name? You know, and personal information about you, don't do them. Check your friends list. Always, always check your friends list. Regardless of how long you've had your account, regardless of if you think you know everybody on your account, check your friends list. Be sure that the people that are seeing your posts know who you are. Turn off your phone or disconnect 30 minutes before bed or sooner. That alone, just that tip alone, statistically, has a great impact on your quality of sleep. If you can't sleep well, think about how long you're on your phone before you go to bed. And finally, make these changes a family effort. This doesn't need to be something, and this is more my opinion than anything. Do this as a family. It's hard to enforce these and you're also sitting there on your phone not communicating and not talking to your kids. So make these changes a family effort. And with that, I'm done. I'm officially done, I promise. I have made a big boo-boo and we're here till 7 o'clock. I'm probably never gonna speak again, and that's fine. But, you know, as we always do, we want to take this time and offer an invitation. If you have not been baptized into Christ and you want to become a Christian, or if you need any prayers, or if you want to recommit your life to Christ, we want to offer that invitation to you as together we stand and as we sing.